This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
I was so lonely. 13 is a hard age to begin with, and then not speaking the language. And
my dad had an old army jeep, and we would drive up in the Sierras, and we'd hike in the mountains. And
the new electric wheelchair is practically an all-terrain vehicle.
Because I feel the earth underneath it, and it's very solid.
In Europe, usually when you're downtown, it's the most elegant part. And when you come by train into Milwaukee, at that time at least, it looked like the slums. And I just, you know, why did we have to leave the refugee camp to come to this?
It's quite an amazing galloping journey.
And it's not a done deal.
Well, I'll tell you, one of my first very vivid dreams that I still remember was that I flew back to the refugee camp in a garbage can.
Though we've always traveled in a Dodge Maxi van.
From our studio in Sebastopol, California, this is Hitchhiking Off the Map, and I'm Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And this is Stories About Journeys.
Today, a long story and a very short one about grandmothers, among other things. Well, no, it is the thing. The first story is about the aftermath of war and ethnic cleansing and all those vast political things that squeeze down to three-minute squirts between commercials on the news. But let's frame the real broad issue, the real geopolitical question of major concern. The serious underlying issue is not oil or terrorism or democracy. It is grandmothers.
And let us add children and waitresses and gastroenterologists and rock bands, what's referred to as the people.
And how they prosper. Long ago, we were part of a theater in Milwaukee 4 or 5 years. One of our ardent fans was a young German woman named Maria Oisch, who worked in social services and lived with her grandmother. And even though we became friends who've stayed in touch over many years, that's about all we knew about her. She married, and her grandmother died, and one day we got a letter saying, maybe you could use this on your show. So this is Maria Oisch Phelps.
What happens to the losers? The people on the losing side of a war? The lessons of history make new history, and World War II, with, what, 40 million dead, should have yielded a few lessons besides just no appeasement. What are the lessons, we wonder, of the 600,000 German civilians killed by deliberate Allied firebombing of civilian targets in Dresden, Hamburg, many other cities, a policy Winston Churchill described approvingly as terror? This isn't left-wing exaggeration. This is simple historical fact. But we don't look much for lessons there, or the much less known fate of thousands of ethnic Germans in southeastern Europe from 1944 to 1948, who suffered expulsion, concentration camps, enslavement, and extermination because they were German. We got a letter from a friend who knew about that firsthand, along with pages from her grandmother and other relatives' letters and journals, and her own memories from the age of 4 of a very long journey. This is Maria's story, in her own words and from the letters.
I was born in a little village, which is now, it's still there, but it has a different name, and my passport no longer has a country for place of birth because they don't know where it belongs. Some villages, when the news came that the Russians were coming, they heard rumors of what would happen to us, and so they all left. But in our village, you know, people were saying, well, we've been here for 200 years, and we belong to the Hungarians, we belong to the Serbs, we belong to this nation, that nation. We always got along. We're just farmers. They're not going to do anything to us. And so everybody stayed. Your father was on the front. In 1944, the Russians marched into the village. All the Germans had to leave their houses and were forced into a camp. On March 10, 1945, my husband died. Soon after, we were ordered out of our houses and put into a camp. They put 25 to 30 people in one small room. We had to find straw and blankets on our own if we wanted some for sleeping. Well, quite a few of them were shot, but if you were kind of useless to them, like older women or sick women or kids. They pretty well just try to starve you to death. Well, the young men would have been in the army, gone, but like teenagers who could have caused problems, they shot them, or men who were into politics before, or like mayors, and they were killed. Young women who were healthy were sent to Russia, but because my mom, I had the baby, and wasn't feeling that well, she wouldn't have been good material to send to Russian labor camps, so she could stay. I remember being in the concentration camp and people dying. I wasn't sure, you know, I didn't quite understand death because I was two, going from two until four we were in that camp. But they were there one day, and then there was a lot of crying and sobbing, and people were put into potato sacks, and a cart came, and they were thrown on the cart, and then you never saw them again. And then it happened to my mom and my little brother. I don't remember her as being young and alive, and I just remember her being very, very sick, and all of us trying to find food for her. With sad heart, I tell you that our dear Grete died on July 17th. I would have written sooner, but I could not. Mariechen says I should write her daddy to send us some marmalade and honey. A day does not go by where she doesn't talk about you. She's very lonesome for you. She's smart enough already to understand that her mother is not coming back. She says, Mommy and brother are not coming back, right, Oma? But Tati is coming back. I remember being hungry a lot and eating grass. And I remember playing with my brother who died after he was dead already. He was younger. He was 1.5. And he must have died overnight. And then I remember somebody grabbing him from me, and I didn't understand what was happening. Playing with the doll, kind of. And rats. I still, you know, when a movie has a rat in it, I get all cold and sweaty because there were rats coming, crawling out of things and ceilings and just all over the place. And it's just very horrifying. One of the rats bit my aunt's nose off, and another one was chewing on another aunt's toes. They never did anything personally to me. It was just, I look at them and I freak out.
In May
1946, I was sent from Sarcha to Pechgarek into a camp. People were sold on a daily basis. The buyers were pushing and shoving each other. Everybody wanted a slave with whom they could do as they pleased. The worst places were with people who took over our own houses and fields. They would not give us any food. For June and July, I was sold to a farmer's wife in Orlovat. When I asked her where we can sleep, we were told, here, outside in front of the horse's stable. The dog had a bed indoors. It was an old man and a young wife. When a young farmer bought me, at his place, schnapps was distilled every night. There was a kettle in the yard and they were all drunk in the morning. To eat, we usually had raw tomatoes. For the evening meal, we were promised scrambled eggs. But it was too late. We arrived back at camp at 8:30 p.m., but weren't given anything to eat. Then I was sent to Karakto in Aladar near Beadra on the River Tice. 24 people came with. The food wasn't too bad there, but hygiene facilities were extremely limited. There was only a small bucket for all of us. Our laundry we had to do in the river. The next day, all Germans up to 50 years of age were ordered to City Hall. We were lined up. Then some carts arrived with wounded Russians. Then we were told that for every one of them, 30 Germans, and for the other one, 20 Germans had to be shot. After my mom died and my brother died, and a lot of other relatives. Grandmother decided that, you know, she thought she was going to die too, and then she was worried about my brother and me being put into a Serbian orphanage. So she decided to risk it and escape with us. And that I remember, walking, and being really scared. In 1946, people started to flee. In 1947, I decided that we must risk it too. We joined a big group, including my grandchildren's Aunt Susie and her children, Hans and Marlene. Somebody must have reported us. All of a sudden, the partisans started to shoot. People started to run, but the children and I couldn't keep up because I was ill. So it was that Marijan and I were all alone in the darkness. We fell into a very deep ditch, but we weren't hurt. By moonlight, we continued until we reached the farm. Since it was September, the corn was already harvested and stalks were piled up. We crawled into one of those piles and I said to Marijan that we need to wait here until the moon is not so bright. Yugoslavia to Romania to Hungary and from Hungary to Austria. And most of that was walking. Well, a whole group left together, but because grandmother had some heart problem and so she couldn't keep up, and I didn't want to leave her, and the rest of the group went ahead, and they got caught, and they were all sent back, and my older brother was with that group. So it was mostly walking during the night and hiding during the day in cornfields and whatever we could find. So again, we waited for darkness to continue walking. We did not know which way. We went by instinct until we couldn't walk anymore from exhaustion and hunger. Some Romanians came and saw us. One of them spoke good German. He asked where we were heading, and I told him we were trying to get to Bardan. His wife gave us supper and fixed us a place to sleep. In the morning, the wife gave us breakfast, and the man did bring us to Bardan. In Temeswar, which is in Romania now, where I had to take a different streetcar. A young couple took me. Those are people who will help your refugees. And so they took me, and she was supposed to wait until the sun goes down, and then they were going to get her. And I was so scared that I'm going to be separated and that nobody will ever find Grandma again. Because, you know, I really lost Mom and I lost my brother, and who knows where Dad is. I wasn't even sure if I, you know, Grandma says I talked about him a lot, but I can't imagine, because I hardly ever saw him, that he was a real person or just somebody that, you know, well, yes, you have a father. And then the other thing I remember, I think that was close to Austria or in Austria already, where there were a lot of hills and a lot of rain. And, you know, you take one step up the hill and you slide back down. And Grandma says, just one more hill, one more hill. Well, they never seemed to end. It was one more hill. So I just remember little flashes, but not the whole.
Maria and her grandmother reached a refugee camp in Austria, where she lived until the age of 13 when they migrated to the U.S. and settled in Milwaukee.
I got so fat. Because there wasn't, you know, up until I was 13, I didn't have any food. And then, you know, Grandma worked in bakeries and restaurants, and she brought home all that stuff. And I just couldn't get full. I kept eating and eating and eating. Once I got done eating, and then, you know, just kind of, I was fine.
So I asked, how has that experience affected who you are today?
I feel like I missed out on stuff. That's why there are all these dolls around here. When I see our neighbors across the street with little kids, I think, gee, it must have been so nice to have a mother around. But then the kids I worked with who had mothers who really weren't mothers, I figured, well, the 13, 14-year-old girls who had kids who themselves were still children, and, you know, they would go out and leave the kids alone, or then this one I had who bought all kinds of drugs, etc., and the kid didn't get any food. Or for the slightest little thing, they'd get beaten. I don't know what's worse, not to have one, period, or to have one who neglects you. I think I probably have empathy for people that we consider our enemy, because I happen to be born onto the wrong side of the political spectrum. And so I know what it feels like to be under somebody who is doing evil things that you have absolutely no control over. And so when I hear of us bombing Afghanistan because we're looking for the Taliban, I want to cry for the kids and the women who are being bombed along with. That's why every chance for a peace movement or speaking out, because it's usually the people that have absolutely nothing to do with what's going on who are suffering. When the Serbians were fighting with the Bosnians a few years back, there was a symposium at UWM given by the Serbians. And I was just curious to see their take on the Balkan history. And they never mentioned, they went way back to, you know, the Turkish Empire and the whole thing, and never mentioned that for almost 200 years the Germans were there. And it's not that they were trying to, they weren't being dishonest or, I mean, they really had no clue. Those kids, they were young, they were in their 30s, and they were never taught that we were there too and helped build the country. On my way out, I ran into one of the teachers who is married to a Serb, and she says, "So, did she learn anything?" And he said, "Well, yeah, only I'm not quite sure how to feel about this. I guess I don't exist." And she says, "Well, look at it this way. Wouldn't you rather not exist there and be here?" Good point, Marilyn. I'd rather be here. Grandmother was a wonderful person. One of those rare souls who, no matter what happens to her, keeps going. I mean, within 1 month, she lost her husband, her son. Well, a couple of months, her husband, her son, her daughter, grandchild, two of her sisters, and she did not give up. There was never any anger. Like when I read the letters that she wrote to my father, it was this excruciating pain, but no anger. And when we came here, I asked her once if she wanted to go back to Yugoslavia for a visit, and she says, "No. They already got all the money. They don't need my tourist money." Just like that, you know. Nothing like, you know, they were awful to us and they did this and that. It was just, "No, they already took all my money before. They don't need any more."
In Milwaukee, we were talking with Maria Oish Phelps. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Originally, we were going to start out with an entirely different story, also about a German immigrant woman, but very different. And the link was, I don't know, they were Germans and grew up right after the war, something like that. But that one was too long. We'll hear it another time. And so we needed something to fill out the time and suddenly thought, aha. And we retrieved this next story that we had to cut because of time from an interview that we had already played. And suddenly, the theme of the show became grandmothers, which I guess is a lesson in how meaning shifts according to what's needed to fill the time slot.
Over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go.
You remember visits to your grandmother? Mine was very nice to me when I was little. I think until I beat her at a game of Chinese checkers, then she got a little colder. But I kind of always thought that she regarded me as one of my mother's series of serious mistakes.
I only knew my father's mother. My mother's mother had died before I was born. And, yeah, I remember Thanksgiving and Christmas going down to Springfield, Illinois for the routine family things. They didn't ever come to our house. I don't think they ever once that I can remember set foot in our house. Well, obviously, the fact that I remember her as being about as tall as the Eiffel Tower had something to do with the fact that I was little. But even when I was a teenager, I still thought of her as being very thin and very tall. And she had a very long face. A thing that I learned about her from sort of confidences in letters and so on after she was dead was that she was very embarrassed by the fact that she had a very generous bosom. I mean, she was a very thin lady and very tall, but she really was well endowed. And I think somehow or other that really unnerved her, made her very embarrassed. She also, she read really trashy paperback detective novels with lots of sex in them. And she said one time to my mother when she thought nobody was listening, you know, I think maybe I missed something.
So let's go over the river and through the woods to visit Galina's grandma in Siberia.
Right now, it came to me a very interesting story. It's a lesson from my grandmother. I just realized that my grandma was teaching us that we don't have to take life seriously. The last teaching of my grandmother was when she already passed away. So this story was passed to me by my sister. So my grandma, the grandma who used to practice witchcraft and in some ways she was psychic, she had the lightest spirit in the world, an incredible sense of humor, never took life seriously. So she passed away, and our uncle called my sister and he asked her to help him to perform the burial. So she came from another city, and everything, this is happening in Siberia in the middle of winter. And my sister brought her son, so there were just three of them to perform the burial. And my sister was telling me she had to bring the grandma's body from a morgue. And I remember from a long time ago that she had this kind of fear of the hospital and especially morgue. And she had to go to the morgue. And the person who was working there, he said, okay, I'm going to bring the body and you have to recognize the body. And my sister Tatiana, she said, you know, Galina, I feel like I'm going to faint any moment. And when he brought the body and he opened that cover, I barely looked. I said, yes, it's her. Because I was about to faint. And he said, okay, we're going to prepare the body, and so the coffin will be ready, so you have just to pick it up. And the next morning, they picked up the coffin. And so they had performed a special ceremony, and they opened the coffin, and she said, for some reason, I couldn't look at grandma's face. I was looking everywhere, but I couldn't look at her face. And I was just looking at her feet. And suddenly, kind of in a subtle way, she said, I was thinking, it's strange, the grandma's feet look much bigger. Because the grandma Vera had a very small feet. So anyway, they performed the ceremony, they put the coffin in the ground, and so it was done. And the next morning, she's got a call. A familiar voice was asking her, are you Tatiana, and did you bury your grandma yesterday? She said, yes, I'm Tatiana, and I did. I buried my grandma yesterday. So the person, another aunt, said, you buried my grandma. And Tatiana couldn't believe that. She was shocked. She was shocked, and she said, Galina, it was so cold that day. We were so happy to finish that burial ceremony. And when the next morning after that call, and the person said, you buried my grandma, now you have to get her out, because the whole village came to perform the burial ceremony, and there's no grandma. So Tatiana said, you know what? We buried your grandma. You can bury our grandma. Of course, it was that person was very unhappy. But I realized it was the last joke of my grandma. She just didn't care. She just didn't care. And it was her signature. I recognized that. And we just laughed. And I said, you know what? She took it so easy. And it's just a message for us that we don't have to be so serious in this life.
In San Anselmo, California, we were talking with Galina Vladi.
So that's our trips for this week. Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by the Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and the California Arts Council.
And from the Hitchhikers Guild. And we'll be performing live in the area too, so visit our website and send us your email address for announcements, www.independenteye.org.
And if you're in the area and you have time and skills and would like to volunteer, we can probably use you. We're in need of specialized services, graphics design, website work, marketing help, as well as some good old solid grunt work on special events. So send us an email and help us keep addressing these hot political topics like living.
Next up, a woman's long journey as her dad became a woman. Tune in. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop, still thinking about Maria's journey. And a quote from Victor Hugo. This century, the 19th, fulfills the office of road laborer for the society of the future. We make the road, others will make the journey. And I'm thinking that the road is still under construction.
She was quite a gardener, and so I took over her gardening and when I first bought the house, she bought me three raspberry bushes and a grapevine so that when she's gone, I remember her. Well, now I have patches and patches of raspberries and tons of grapes. So I kind of smile and I say, yeah, Grandma, you're still here.